the U.S. House is scheduled to vote on a bipartisan infrastructure package tomorrow, a proposal that already passed the Senate with bipartisan support last month. But House Republicans are being encouraged to vote against it, and progressive Democrats are threatening to vote it down if there's no deal to pass President Biden's larger social safety net package. It's the Week in Washington. We'll look at that and the threat of a government shutdown coming up in days. You can join in at 800-642-1234. After all this back and forth, are you hoping that something gets passed in Congress? Do you want to see increased spending for roads, bridges, broadband, that sort of thing? How about the other package with child tax credit payments, more funding related to climate change? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
There's a lot of complicated twists and turns, Ginger, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, what it comes down to is Democrats will either pass something or they won't, and it's really hard to predict which it's going to be at this point. Do I have that about right?
I think that's close. I mean, generally, bills either pass or they don't. So that's the fate of all of them. But I would say that even watching sort of all of this drama unfold in Washington, or sausage making, if we're going to pick another cliche, it's still very likely that Congress passes both of their top priority pieces of legislation on, in sort of the broader sense, the two you mentioned, the infrastructure bill and then the social safety net bill, and that they pass a bill this week to keep the government funded and avoid a shutdown on Friday. So it looks like everything is probably going to get done. There just might be some headaches for people before they get there.
Well, I want to focus in on one piece of the drama here and give a listen to Representative Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, on MSNBC yesterday, talking about the differences between Democrats on the order in which to pass these two bills. Here's a listen.
The position of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, we are a 96-member strong caucus, has been for 3.5 months that we are not going to move one piece of the president's agenda without the much bigger piece of the president's agenda.
And we've heard basically the opposite from some moderate Democrats, this long game of you go first, no, you go first. What is the latest on which goes first and how they get sorted out, Ginger?
Well, Speaker Pelosi said this week that she was sort of going to try to separate these two so they stopped being considered something that had to happen in tandem, although she may decide to do that. As Representative Jayapal was pointing out, she won't agree with that. I think this is a case, and it's important to remember, we're talking about bills that overwhelmingly all of the Democrats want, right? There isn't really a Democrat that we expect to say no to any of these pieces of legislation at the end of the day. So they're sort of arguing about process a bit, and they're trying to keep their leverage. That's really what's happening here with Jayapal. They want to get as much as they possibly can out of that social safety net bill. And they think that if they pass the infrastructure bill, they're going to lose all their leverage. The problem is that their leverage is that they would delay something that they've pretty much admitted ultimately they're going to pass anyway. And if you're Joe Manchin, the person you're trying to pressure in this system, in this idea, he doesn't really mind that much if they pass the infrastructure bill today or next week or next month. He thinks it's going to get done. So it might not be as much pressure as they were hoping, but it sure has made for some fun drama in Washington for those of us who watch it. Lots of speculation that things could die. And I think really the big question we have is the social safety net bill, when it does pass, since it's likely to ultimately pass, is it $1 trillion or is it $3.5 trillion? And those are very different bills that would include very different programs.
What are some of the things in the bigger program that might be taken off the table in this sort of back and forth negotiation process?
I mean, one of the first things we've seen that looks like it is going to have a hard time remaining in the package is something that's actually been proposed now by the last two presidents, which is letting the government negotiate drug prices for Medicare recipients. This is something that Trump and now Biden have argued will help save the federal government money and provide better health coverage because they'll get a better price for prescription drugs, mainly for seniors. Pharma and some other outside groups are fighting this, and they're telling seniors that ultimately it's going to make it so the government can tell them they can't have certain medications, that it's going to allow them to not cover some. And for that reason, there's an increasing amount of lawmakers who are saying that they won't support including that provision in that social safety net bill.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from NBC News Digital, looking at some of the top stories in the nation's capital. You can join in with your thoughts on infrastructure, what you want to see pass, not see pass. If you want to see that Medicare drug, prescription drug negotiation thing stay in the package, call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have thoughts or questions about a possible government shutdown, the debt ceiling coming up, or questions about that, 800-642-1234 is the number. Ginger, you said you also expect to see the government get funded and not shut down by the end of the week. What is the latest on that, though?
Yeah, we think that the Senate could vote as early as this afternoon on what they're calling a clean continuing resolution. That means it's a bill that just funds the government, and the one that they're discussing would be through December 3rd, and it doesn't include a separate provision to raise the debt ceiling. This was the provision that came under attack from Republicans and was the reason that they voted down the first attempt to fund the government on Monday. Seems Democrats are saying, fine, you know, you don't want to do it, then don't, but we got to fund the government. We can't have a shutdown on Friday, and that they're going to proceed with this funding bill. So we expect that within the next 36 hours, we'll see both chambers sort of quickly pass this funding bill and ensure that Friday morning, the federal government is still open and operating.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. EJ is with us in Oshkosh. EJ, hello.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. It's DJ.
Oh, DJ, I'm sorry.
But no worries. Listen, I respect you all very much, but I've grown up with this my whole life. It's really just a bunch of political posturing, and it's a game of chicken. These career politicians and the sociological sycophants, they just need to let this run its course once and for all and let it go if that's the way that it's going to be. It's the Dutch boy, the paint boy, sticking all their fingers in a dike that isn't going to hold, and all this political posturing. Just let it run its course.
And run its course by let it go, you mean allow a shutdown, DJ?
I'm all for it. We've been bolstering this false system for too long.
All right, I got you, DJ. Thanks for the call. Ginger says, DJ says, let it go. Let's put an end to this game of chicken and just let a shutdown happen. We did let that happen some years back, at least a partial shutdown. Is there a lot of stomach for that in Washington right now?
Absolutely not. I think that it's highly, highly unlikely that we see a government shutdown. I mean, Republicans aren't asking for anything. They're not putting demands on funding, saying that they won't fund the government unless they get something else, which is what we saw happen in 2013 when they wanted the Affordable Care Act repealed. And I think this really goes to sort of a fundamental difference between Republicans and Democrats. Democrats are willing to back off their demands, the debt ceiling demands, because they think government needs to be open and that it's important. Republicans weren't willing before to back off their demands because they're okay with the government being shut down for some period of time. Democrats do not see that as an acceptable path, especially in a pandemic when the CDC and the FDA and so many government agencies are still being utilized so heavily that I would be shocked if the government is not open on Friday. I think that they really view this as a top priority to make sure that that happens.
Thanks for the call, DJ. We're talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, with us today for our roundup of some of the top stories in Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up a little more on a possible government shutdown and that debt ceiling and the possible U.S. Government default, the politics of that and the meaning of it if it happened. You can join in on those topics at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're picking up our look at some of the top stories in national politics. Ginger Gibson stays with us from NBC News Digital. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the impact of an not super likely, but still possible government shutdown starting as soon as this weekend? Are you worried about the U.S. debt ceiling? If it's not increased, possible defaults on debt payments, big impacts on the economy. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I want to turn to that debt ceiling now, Ginger. And Republican Senator John Cornyn from Texas here talking about Democrats' efforts to raise the debt ceiling in a press conference. Here's a listen to him talking yesterday.
They currently are scrambling to try to figure out how are they going to lift the debt ceiling, something that's Leader McConnell told them they would have to do. If they're determined to spend at least $3.5 trillion more in borrowed money, that they were going to have to lift the debt ceiling to accommodate that debt by themselves.
Senator Cornyn there speaking today. I said yesterday, it was actually earlier today. Ginger, the debt ceiling, first of all, what happens? It sounds abstract. What happens if we don't raise the debt ceiling and can't keep paying off debts we've already incurred?
So this is all an estimate of what would happen, since the U.S. government has never defaulted on its debt before. But in theory, if the U.S. did default on its debt, we would see the markets likely go berserk because we use U.S. Treasury bonds to back so much of the stock market. It would have reverberating effects throughout the markets, which then in turn would have reverberating effects throughout the government, I mean, the economy. And one would have to assume that if we did so, it would be harder for us to borrow in the future, which would mean that where we get fairly cheap money now, because we're the U.S. government and everyone assumes we're good for it when we say that we will pay them back. If we didn't pay someone back at some point, other entities might be less inclined to loan our government money and it may become more expensive. So even the simple things that we borrow for now could become a lot more costly for the American taxpayer to do in the future.
And that statement that Democrats would spend $3.5 trillion more in borrowed money, the $3.5 trillion in the Democrats' spending plan isn't entirely or all borrowed, right? There are some pay fors along the way. Do I have that right?
That's right. So just so that everyone is, if they haven't heard this before, I'll say it again. Raising the debt ceiling by October is not to pay for any bill that the Democrats are currently trying to pass. It's to pay for things that Congress has already approved spending money on, things that President Trump signed and approved. And so this is old spending that they're borrowing money for. And then, yes, you're right. This $3.5 trillion would not all be borrowed money. Some of it would be paid for. It includes raising taxes to pay for it. It includes cutting programs elsewhere. It also includes some budget tricks that have allowed the White House and Democrats in Congress to try to contend that it doesn't cost anything. That's a bit of a stretch. We do know that it does cost things and that it likely would incur some debt in the future, but not the raise that they're being asked to do now.
What are we hearing in general from Republicans? It seems like Republicans in the Senate want the debt ceiling to be increased. They don't want the government to default, but they're not looking to vote for it. They want it to be on Democrats. Is that right?
I mean, this is pure politics at its very base. They think the debt ceiling should be increased. They think that it would be catastrophic if we didn't increase the debt ceiling by next month. But they think that it is a perfect talking point for them and next year's elections to say, Democrats raised the debt ceiling by X number of dollars. And for that reason, they don't want to take a vote that raises it. They want to make Democrats do it all on their own so that they could have that talking point. And it's really just brass tacks politics that we're watching play out.
So Democrats can't pass it on their own in normal ways because Republicans can and have blocked votes on it and blocked it from going from a filibusterable thing to a majority vote. So what can Democrats do if they want to pass the debt ceiling without Republican support?
So they could. We talked earlier about the social safety net bill. It's one that's using sort of a sleight of hand, a rules trick to get through without any Republican support. They could do it with that, or they could put it on another bill. And what it was being discussed right now and what I wouldn't rule out as an option, you know, they find some piece of legislation that's already cleared the filibuster that names a post office and they attach a debt ceiling and to increase to it. And then Republicans simply don't object. And require that the bill receive another 60 votes and then have it voted on by 50 Democrats. That's one option for them and something that has been done in the past and could be done again if Democrats decide to give up on their goal to make Republicans also take this difficult vote and just go ahead and do it themselves.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital, looking at some of the top stories this week in the nation's capital. Want to switch gears now, Ginger. We heard from General Mark Milley and other military leaders about the withdrawal from Afghanistan, about the withdrawal itself, some revelations from books by Robert Woodward and Robert Costa with comments from General Milley in them. What kind of things do we hear, first of all, looking at the withdrawal from Afghanistan from these military leaders?
Yeah, we heard testimony in the Senate yesterday from some of these leaders, including Milley, as you said, McKenzie, Secretary Austin. And there was the suggestion that contrary to what President Biden was saying at the time, his military advisors were telling him to leave a small number of U.S. troops in Afghanistan beyond that August 31st withdrawal date. Now, Secretary Austin did point out that had they left troops there, the Taliban would no longer recognize the ceasefire, and they would have started firing on U.S. troops at the beginning of September. And that would have been a very difficult situation and might have cost us more American lives. But we did learn that they had recommended some troops stay on the ground in Afghanistan. And we also learned about some of the challenges that they were facing as they watched the Afghanistan government collapse.
What did they say about that? And again, and this was what I think few people anticipated, not that the Taliban would end up in control of Afghanistan, but that it would happen so quickly as the U.S. was in the midst of this huge logistical effort to withdraw Americans and many Afghans from the country. What kind of things did they say about that timeline that caught them off guard?
Yeah, you know, the U.S. government seems to have come to terms some number of years ago with the fact that the Taliban were going to regain control of Afghanistan, that short of just indefinite occupation by the U.S., that was going to happen. But we heard Secretary Austin say yesterday that he was surprised. They were caught entirely off guard by how quickly it happened, that the U.S. thought they would, while they had some presence there, because they were still there on the ground, that they would be able to help bolster the Afghan security forces and keep the Taliban at bay. But it became apparent rapidly that even with them there, as they were exiting, they were unwilling to fight and that they were abandoning their posts and allowing the Taliban to take over. And that really caught a lot of Americans, military and intelligence officials off guard.
Milley also got questions about calls he made to a counterpart in China, revealed in that book I mentioned, Peril. What kind of things did lawmakers want to find out from him?
Yeah, we heard Milley on Tuesday sort of try to preemptively answer some questions about this. He said that these calls were done at the direction of the defense secretaries at the time, members of the Trump administration, and that they were done in accordance with regular communications, that it was his obligation to tell the Chinese that they had no intention of bombing them and that he was acting based on the intelligence. Now, when he got into testimony on Wednesday, in the House, it went a little different. We saw House members who often are a little bit more extravagant. And then we saw Representative Cheney really sort of criticizing fellow Republicans for what they were saying to Milley about his role in that phone call, and a little bit more of an inter-party clash in that case. But Milley has been consistent that he did nothing wrong, and that he was obligated to tell the Chinese when the U.S. learned that the Chinese thought the U.S. was going to attack them, that was not actually something that was in the works.
And in that Peril book, at least in the early releases, when this information was first coming out, it was unclear whether General Milley was lone wolfing this, reaching out to China on his own initiative versus doing, as he said, this under the direction of the Secretaries of Defense as part of the chain of command. There's been other reporting on this suggesting it was the latter. Is this the last word on this, do you think?
Yes, I think that's what Milley was saying. He was doing this because the Secretary of Defense had asked him to. And I think it's important to remember here that, as he pointed out, Trump didn't intend to attack the Chinese. So it wasn't like he was promising them that he would tell them ahead of an expected attack, right? There was no attack in the works. And that lines of communication like this between world military leaders are common and important and are done to keep people from thinking attacks are coming that aren't. And that's what he was doing. He was simply making sure no one had was misinformed and that they were going to start doing things expecting the U.S. To fire missiles at them.
In our last minute, Ginger, what story is at top of mind for you over the next week or two?
I think we're going to be watching how House Democrats interact with one another. If you're a lover of politics, this is a moment for their party to figure out where they stand and what they're doing. And I would be paying a little attention to how they get along. I think Nancy Pelosi will go down in history as one of the most effective speakers to ever run the House chamber. And this is going to be a big moment for her as she tries to deliver President Biden a big legislative victory. Looks like we're in crunch time. So this is it, I think, in the next week or so.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, Deputy Washington Editor at NBC News Digital. She was with us today for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics.